Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses, and I do it for an audience of entrepreneurs. I was speaking at an event. It must have been about a year and a half ago at this point.
Maybe like 2 years.
Maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
I can't believe how much you've done in those 2 years. So I get off the stage, and this woman's telling me that she is she has software called Plan for Instagram management. And what it does is, and I didn't even know this was possible at the time. She said, you know, people really like the grid to look good. I let them edit what the grid looks like by moving pictures around and making it look nice. I let them schedule their posts. And I said, I had no idea this existed. And she said, oh yeah, yeah, this existed. It's people spent a long time doing it. My software makes it easy. I said, that's exciting. That's great. And then I like to find out what people's problems are to get a sense of what their frustrations are. And she says, my thumbs hurt. And I go, that's kind of new. What do you mean? Why are your thumbs hurting? She goes, Andrew, I do tech support. I go, well, don't you create like all these shortcuts and stuff? She goes, I do it in DM. So wait, Instagram DM? She goes, that's my main support channel. I had no idea that was even a thing.
Mm-hmm. I remember this conversation now. It's all coming back.
You opened my eyes to so much. I love doing conferences because being on stage then gives people an excuse to come and talk to me afterwards and show mm-hmm. me the stuff that they're doing that I never would have known about. there's another person who was doing something interesting in the echo mm-hmm. space with the speaker, but they were way early and they hadn't figured out what the power was. And frankly, we're a couple of years later and we still don't know what the power is of that. But for Instagram, you've figured it out. Your business is growing tremendously. The person whose voice you just heard is Christy Lawrence. She is the founder, the CEO. In some ways, she was like the CTO even of Plan. I invited her here to talk about how she went from being an artist to being an entrepreneur. I want to find out how she got her app coded, even though she is not a developer and kept screwing up the development process. Mm-hmm. How she sold anything to do with Instagram, and then how she converted people from just one-time payments in the app store to recurring revenue. Payment customers. There's so much more that you did that's amazing. We're going to do it all thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first, if you're starting a business, if you've got a business, you need a website, you got to go to HostGator. HostGator.com/Mixergy will hook you up. And the second, wait till you hear Christy's problems with development. If you need a great developer, really the best of the best, go to TopTal.com/Mixergy. I'll tell you about those later. But first, Christy, revenue-wise, where are you now?
Hi, good morning. I would say we're in the multiple millions now. So Plan's been alive for 4 years and completely bootstrapped. And we've grown a team to over 30 in 10 different countries and just, yeah, multiple millions now.
Are you pulling in a profit yet, Christy?
Yes.
More than a million in profit?
Yes.
Wow, look at this. 2 years ago when we met up, where were you? Do you have a sense?
I reckon 2 years ago, I would have had about 100,000 users, maybe I would have been able to support myself and maybe two developers maximum. So maybe 40K MRR. Yeah.
40,000 monthly recurring revenue. So about $500,000, $500,000. And look at how far you've come. All right. I want to get an example of what this software does through the eyes of a user. How about this woman,
Absolutely.
Jenna Kutcher? What was
Absolutely.
Jenna Kutcher doing? What did your software do for her? And then where did she end up because of it?
So when I was community manager of Plan, I would obviously meet people through DMs and messaging because the trick with social media is to make friends on the internet. Sorry, mom. So I met this one lady called Jenna who was killing it. So she had online courses for photographers. So she had taken her business from I'm really good at photography. How can I scale my time? So she had gone from photography in person and doing all the editing to then building a team and creating an online courses for anything. So what ended up happening is, yes, she had her wedding photographer courses, but her social media started to really blow up because with Plan, I introduced her to the platform through Instagram. She then could get a team to organize her social media for her. But inside the platform's also got a strategist, so you can really understand what themes you're talking about. So, for example, we know that the best themes are vulnerability, community, inspiration, education. So those are the types of themes that people need in their brand. And you have to know which one of those themes works for your audience. So Jenna was able to figure that out really early. And then she was able to scale herself and her team, do all of her editing, scheduling, and hashtag research within Plan and schedule it. And since then, I've seen her grow to multiple revenue streams. She now has business masterminds. She runs Instagram courses using Plan. and like showing other people how they can do it too. She rents houses in Hawaii, and it would have been in the space of 2 years. And she's grown her own personal brand as well with her own personal account. So she's got a business and a personal account now, and now sells massive advertising space with almost 1 million followers. And I think I would have met her at 30,000.
She had 30,000. She has about 1 million followers on one account or both together?
I'd say on one account. She's running it as a personal brand now. I think she merged them. So she worked out that one worked better than two and just merged them.
And so it's not just about scheduling posts. It's also about knowing what to post.
And when to post and why to post.
And and giving analytics on posts. How do you know when to post? Based on her individual reactions?
So we have two metrics. So we have based on her actual previous times she's posted. So we have a look at her historical data, and we can make it and let everybody know this is when your best time has been to post. And then we can also pull the data of when your followers are most active online and show you that time.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So you get two options. So the best thing about marketing is that it's about testing and optimizing and learning. And I know that because my background has been marketing forever before I did plan. So I was like, how can I bring this to more people and make it really easy? So software it was.
What were you doing? You were doing marketing for AIG? Or where?
Yeah, that's right. IAG?
What's IAG? AIG is the insurance company. What's IAG?
It's also an insurance company. So okay. Insurance company that has five different brands inside Australia and New Zealand. Okay. And I was responsible for their TV, their socials, their print, and radio, and the entire strategy through to creative execution. And prior to that, I was working in agency in creative.
Okay. And so as I'm looking at your Instagram, it's Christy Lady Lawrence. Am I right?
Yeah.
So what I did is I started scrolling back in time to see what you did.
Yeah, all the way
back. If I go further back, what I see is a bunch of drawings. It seems like what you used to do is post your drawings on Instagram.
Yeah. So I've left them there for a reason. I'm still embarrassed to this day, but I've left them there because people do like to scroll back and see what I used to do. But I used to sell paintings and artwork. So I have a very particular style. And I used to come home from work every single day and draw one thing and post on Instagram. And that's another story in itself. And then I started selling artwork through Instagram, and I started making more money doing that than my day job. So I was doing these really specific line drawings that were digital art, and then the rest of it was just kind of playtime. But it was
digital
very
art.
Messy.
It wasn't paint on a canvas.
It was a mix. Yeah, I had a mixture.
So I'm looking
but
at
what
this
I worked
one,
out. Yeah.
This is one of, is this you sitting outside? I'm kind of holding up my iPad.
No, that's someone that I used to really look up to. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. But then in that case, it's you. This is your drawing, right? Is this representative of what you did? It is. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's line art. You would draw it, post a new one every day, and then people would buy this?
Yeah. So
for how much?
Sometimes up to 2,000. So
$2,000 they would pay for that.
Some of them, yeah.
Okay.
So as an example, I don't know if you can see this, but this is where I kind of ended up with these black fashion-y line drawings, and people would pay up to, you know, $2,000 for some of these.
So let me describe for people who are listening. Obviously, everyone's listening. It's a line drawing of a woman, very minimal, and then the earrings are where the action is in this color. Same thing on this next one that you showed me. Mm-hmm. So you would draw these. People would pay you for them because of what? Why would they buy it from you?
So a lot of people would want illustrations of themselves as fashionistas, or they want avatars or icons, or people want them for their walls in their office. And like, I had people like, can I pay you $2,000 for a black and white Charlie Chapman and things like that. So, and that would only take me a few hours because my lines are so minimal.
Yeah.
And but they're very specific. And it's a skill that I've been, you know, doing for myself since I was five. Like, this is not something that happened overnight. And so what I learned though was the more I posted, the more minimal and the more niche that I became, the faster my Instagram grew, the faster my orders came. And I learned organically how to use Instagram for myself. But because I have an artist in my brain and I have a senior marketer in my brain, I was able to put the two together. But my friend started saying like, what are you doing? And like, how are you doing this? I want to do this.
Before we get to your friend, you said that as a kid, as a girl, you would do these drawings all the time. And this was just an evolution of it. And Instagram got attention for it. The other thing I heard as a girl, you would steal grapefruit.
Yes.
It's a long time ago. I think it's okay to talk about. What did you do with grapefruit?
So my mum and dad are both really entrepreneurial, and I came from an entrepreneurial family where you sit at the dinner table and talk about the sales of the day. Like that.
What did your parents do? My parents did that too. What did your parents do?
My dad used to import cars from Japan and sell them wholesale, and my mum had a mixture of craft and designy businesses.
Okay. All right. And so you'd sit at the dinner table, talk about how he sold, what he sold, right?
And how he picks cars and his like thesis for making money. And because you'd overhear your mum and dad talking because, you know, kids were quiet at the table and there were four of us sitting there like throwing food at each other and mum and dad kind of talking about work. So you'd overhear like really like serious business conversations. So I was kind of lucky that way. And we had to work for our money. So my mum and dad taught us the value of a dollar very, very early. And I was like, oh, there's got to be a better way to this. Like very early, there's got to be better ways. So I would take my go-kart and go down the road to where the school was. And I would, in the weekend, shake all the grapefruit out of the trees and climb them and get the best ones at the top, bag them in bags of 10, and then sell them outside my house or at my dad's car yard. And because I'd learned about wholesale from my dad, people would come in and be like, all right, well, I'll sell you all 10 bags for $100. And just like, you can just say. And
instead of selling them one at a time or a bag of three for their family. Yes. And so you would sell them wholesale.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I learned very early.
This was definitely, this entrepreneurial expression was definitely in you early on. When you say you were making more money from selling these drawings than you did working at IAG, how much are we talking about when it was just you drawing on Instagram in these photos that, I saw?
I mean, I could make $8,000 a week.
$8,000 a week?
One week I did. So 1 week, Red Bull
What's
asked
typical?
Me to.
Oh, sorry, Red Bull.
It'd be Red Bull approached me and asked me to do some drawings for them. Okay. The best thing about Instagram, like, it doesn't matter where you are in the world. Doesn't matter. The opportunities are crazy. I would say it'd be a few thousand a week because I was charging between $1,000 and $3,000 a drawing.
Okay, a few thousand a week. That's just because you were drawing. Were you doing anything to get attention for it? Like, I'm listening to Gary Vaynerchuk today, and on his podcast, he keeps saying, "I want you to DM 400 people, asking them to talk to you, and all 400 people are going to ignore you. You're going to say Gary Vaynerchuk misled me, and he didn't lie, and he didn't direct me in the right place." But then I do it again, and then after you do it 3 or 4 times, meaning reach 400 people, someone's going to contact you, and something good could happen. Did you do that? Is that the Instagram life?
No.
What did you do to get attention? How did anyone pay attention to you?
I would call that the spray and pray approach, not the approach that I would take. So I would look up people that like my certain style of artwork. And because I knew what my brand was, I knew that the people that liked my art probably liked West Elm, or they probably liked other shops or clothing brands, or they probably followed Vogue magazine, right?
Okay.
So I would go to those, I would go to their feeds. And I'd look at their top engaged followers. So I'd just look at their last few posts and see who was chatting, and then literally strike up conversations with those people and ask them questions. You've always got to leave with a question.
Okay.
And it's not just emojis or this is amazing or anything like that. It's like, oh, hey, how did you do that? How many hours was that? Have you got any tips for me? And actually having a conversation.
Like, and respond and respond and respond.
And respond and respond and respond and respond and respond all day.
All day. You can't even do it on a computer. You can't DM on a computer. No. So it would just be you.
So this was public. So you can actually do it on web, on the desktop. You can do it on Instagram, just on their wall. So I was doing that.
You weren't DMing. Got it.
No, wouldn't DM that. So it would be public because then other people could join in the conversation, and helps the rest. Yeah.
Yeah. It is easier.
And then when you create these friendships, so for example, when I was first making plan, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, that I figured out who the people were. So I figured out my target audience and then figured out who they would listen to. And then which now is influencer marketing. But back then what I would do is go and turn on all of their post notifications. So when they posted at any time of the day or night, I would go and write messages on their wall, like literally publicly on their grid photos, and have a conversation. And it was very public. Every post, and so after 6 months, they got to know who I was.
Every post you do, just so people understand, it's not like she's got. I thought you'd have like 200,000 followers. Yeah. That's why you sold. You have, not 200,000 followers, 2,102 followers. So we're not talking about a lot of posts or like a lot of followers. We're talking about a lot of work. That's what you were doing. You were starting to say then that you made more money from this than you did from your job, and as a result, you did what? People started coming to you and saying, I want
help. How are you doing? My friends in real life started to see that I was so happy. I was at home painting all day. And they're like, I want to do this. So it started with my artist friends. And then it started kind of widening the net when other people would see. My engagement rate, I mean, yeah, I get 2,000 followers, but I get 100 comments almost every. If you scroll through my posts, there's between 70 and 100 comments most of them. And yep. It's not about collecting followers. It's about having conversations and making real. So when people use the word influencer these days, they think it's, I feel like it's being used as kind of a dirty word. But for me, it's like, are you actually listening to the person and are they a person of influence? And in my life, I posted about roller skating because I love roller skating. And I've got like 20 friends who have messaged and said, I've brought roller skates. So I'm like, okay, so my influence does actually work here. So that's what got the attention of people. So I became now what's known as a micro influencer. And then I figured out that when I was helping people, they were asking me for help and I was repeating myself a lot. Okay. So like you have to figure out what, like for example, the one thing that I would say the most over and over is that your grid is your shop front. And no one's scrolling. Thank you for scrolling that far back, but nobody's doing that on a normal feed. You've got one or two scrolls, and that is representative of who you are and what you stand for. And if you aren't able to show that visually in 2 seconds in a way that connects with someone, then they've gone. And your bio needs to match those images. So for me, if you don't have total control of that, you're letting your entire shopfront be led by someone else or your whim. So I was like, yeah,
This mm-hmm. is something that you told me when we met in person. You said, your grid is your storefront. You mm-hmm. said people are looking, when they tap your face, what do you want them to see? I always thought the grid is just whatever you happen to post. Post whatever goes into the feed. The feed is what matters. The grid is like an afterthought. You flip it. You say, no,
yeah.
The grid, you're shaking like you're uncomfortable with me even saying this. So the grid is people coming. It's like the old web page. It's the mm-hmm. storefront. And so I still want to be in the feed. Does that mean that I keep my grid pure and then every once in a while I shove something? How do I post stuff in the feed mm-hmm. without ruining my grid?
Yeah. So with Plan, you can upload images and you can edit them. So brand consistency. So if you have a fashion brand or if you have a brand that's really focused on visuals, you would want to have the same editing across all of them. So there's that consistency so that if you follow me, and then I start scrolling in the grid. Even if I haven't seen your name, I know who it is. And it's that consistency that we help with.
Okay.
So that's one part of it. And then depending on who you are, so for example, your podcast, Mixergy.
Yep.
You are the focus and who you're interviewing. So it might be like you every 7th picture or you every 6th picture or, you know, and it's jumbled up so that it looks even and cohesive. And you might find that you learned something off an entrepreneur. So you might have a photo of them with a quote. So it depends on how you run your company and the themes. But
when I think about what I post, I'm thinking about what ends up in the grid and how it looks in the grid more so than I am about how it looks in the feed, or I have to think both?
You have to kind of think both. But for me, the most important thing is that if you're wanting to connect with people and find the followers, because once someone follows you, they technically become a warm lead. They're interested in what you do and they'll eventually, if they've followed you, you're going to be serving them more nurturing content to move them along your marketing funnel. I'm a marketer, so my brain thinks in funnels.
I like that. Good. Yeah. I don't want the art.
No. So when you come to somebody's Instagram grid, your mind goes, am I interested in seeing more of this? And you either follow in a heartbeat or not. And if you follow, then you generally become a warm lead.
Okay. And so people were asking you this. You were mm-hmm. selling. First, you were helping for free. Then you were charging. Am I right?
Yes.
And then eventually you said, I need to create software.
So the biggest thing was the one thing that I said the most was have a think about how your images sit next to each other. So you wouldn't have a mid shot next to a mid shot or a flat lay next to a flat lay. If you have a look at the really successful Instagram feeds, the perspective of photos that sit next to each other are never the same. So you wouldn't have a centered next to a centered unless all of the photos were centered, because it will drive that white space out. Or is it too busy? Or have you got too much white space? So the only way that you can plan it. So I would be talking to people and they'd say, I use Photoshop grids, or I put it in Paint, or I have a private account and I practice there first before I use it on my real grid. And the worst thing that people would do is post a picture, see it didn't work in their grid, and then delete it, which then ruins the algorithm because they're not, it's just one of those algorithm pieces on Instagram that it's not a great thing to do. So
why? Okay. I guess that would be a too detailed of a conversation.
It's a long study. Okay. Let's put it that way. It's a very full 5-year long study of when you post, like Instagram rewards consistency. And if people turn on post notifications, you get there, it's deleted. And then what's happening is that you start posting 3 or 4 times in a day. It's showing Instagram that it's not quality because there's no engagement, and then you delete it.
Okay.
Yeah. So these are off top, but yeah.
you started teaching, you were thinking about software. Let's take a moment. We're going to come back to that. Mm-hmm. My first sponsor is HostGator for hosting websites. You've got a website for your business. Why is there also a Christy-Lawrence.com site? This could be a good lead in into my ad. Why do you have a personal site?
So I only started that about 6 months ago because I keep being asked to speak at events and I didn't have any. So as a founder, you have the brand itself, and my personal brand was being lost in with Plan. So I decided to pull it out. So if one day Plan is sold or Plan doesn't exist, then my brand still exists. That's the purpose of that.
Let me give you another reason why I think people, first of all, that's a big reason why if someone listening to us doesn't have a personal page, they need it. Here's another one. You get one easy page to control what people see and when they try to understand who you are. So one of the first things I did was I went to your business site and I looked at that. And then another thing I did was I said, does she have a website? Can I find out a little bit more about her? And sure enough, you linked it from Plan. What's the full site for Plan?
It's planthat.com.
Planthat.com. I followed the link over to your website. And then I read a little bit more about you and I got a sense of who you were apart from the business. I think these are easy gimmies. Everybody who's listening to us should have at least a personal website. Even if you're not an influencer, not a social media person, even if you think that it's too arrogant to have it, guess what? You're hiring. People want to know who you are. You're doing business with someone. You're calling a stranger. They want to know who you are, right?
Just to be honest, like this is a crazy story, but Vogue called me out of nowhere. And the thing about 5-year-old Christy during fashion illustrations, always wanting to be in Vogue. Vogue calls me and says, will you keynote speak at our events? We just want to know more about you. Do you have a website? I'm like, oh, shit. So I just went home and just made a website. And I was like, here you go.
Great. Yeah. That's the thing to do. Yeah. And I'll tell you this. If whoever's listening to us doesn't have one now, maybe doesn't need one now, 5 years from now, you might. The fact that it's been there for 5 years gives you and the site more credibility. Here's what you need to do. Easy peasy way to get started. Go to HostGator.com/Mixergy. HostGator's been around forever. When you go to HostGator, one of the things that you're going to do is be able to pick what software you want to manage your site. I like WordPress. Super easy. About a third of all websites are hosted on WordPress. One-click install, you get WordPress. You pick a theme that's a personal brand theme. You put your content up there. Keep it super simple. I'm talking about even one page is enough. If you go more than 3 pages, just go have a drink. Relax. You're going overboard. Don't even do a blog. Just have a simple page on there and you're good to go, and then move on with the rest of your life. And if you want to come back and improve it, you've got a thing to improve, but don't overthink the beginning of it. HostGator.com/Mixergy will make it super easy. They'll take good care of you. And especially if you want a personal brand site, I can't imagine that there's a better way to get started. And since it's WordPress, if you don't like them, if you say a year from now, Andrew was wrong, you pick up your site, you make an easy transition to whatever other hosting company you want to be with. But I love them. I've been with them now for years. HostGator.com/Mixergy. And thank you to everyone who's using that URL. You're supporting the good interviews that we do here. All right. First thing you did when you decided to create software was what?
Well, having the idea, obviously, I sat on it for a couple of months because I thought, maybe. It's not really my background. I don't really know anyone. And then it kept waking me up at night. And there was this one moment that I literally had my very first panic attack ever. I was walking through a shop looking for a wine decanter. And I'd always worked in service, because marketing and insurances are all service-based. I never had a physical, tangible product. So I was always like, I really want something I can photograph. And I just was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And I'm having this panic attack in a shop. And my husband looks at me and goes, what is going on? I was like, I'm going to build this app. I'm going to build it. He's like, don't you have to know how to build an app? I'm like, nah, there's 2 million in the app store. It can't be that hard. And he's like, okay, well, there you go then. And that was kind of the first step, was acknowledging I am all in. Because if you are not all in, then you, like for me personally, you are never going to get there.
Did you quit your job at that point?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
So you really were all in.
I was
and
all
then
in.
You went yeah. to where to get your developer?
So first of all, I needed to teach myself how what an app looks like and how to, and I'd been in enough agencies to know what wireframing looks like. So I wireframed the entire, what I thought the entire app was. And I went on to like Upwork or Freelance, one of those websites, because I think the first thing, and I already knew that you can't hide your idea. You have to talk about it. And having that mentality for me of I can't share it because someone will steal it is the opposite way that you need to think when you're starting a company, because the more people you tell, the more people that will help and come out of the woodwork, and no one has your passion. No one's going to execute it like you are. So you need to really just tell the world. So I jumped onto Upwork and said, I want to build an app and just put it out to the world. And I got about 10 different hits that came back and said, Christy, if this is a scope of work, this is a joke. This is what you're missing. And they would give me
this. They said that to you, the people who responded? Oh.
Absolutely.
What were you asking for the app to have, and what did they say was missing?
I would have sent my 4 screens and a scope of work that would have been like, this screen I want to drag and drop, and this screen I want to this.
Okay.
And they came back and they're like, okay, so do you want an animation? What size file? What type of image library picker do you want? This screen's missing. These 10 screens are missing. These pop-ups are missing. So
okay.
I literally got a list of what I needed to make and learning along the way of what was. And because I had 10 different kind of opinions, I was able to then build it out. And then while I was waiting for feedback, I was watching YouTube videos until my eyes bled on how to do UI UX or best practices or how to do App Store ASO, which is App Store optimization. So trying to teach myself, okay, so once I have it, what happens next? I then built my very first website was on Squarespace, and it was a one pager to collect emails. And I started learning how to do an email list. So the people that would sign up, I would send weekly Instagram tips to, and just started nurturing. So I did this all in the background while I was learning from the app developers what was missing. And then it was a couple of months before I had a final scope, final designs, final everything. And I had learned probably more so in those 3 months than I have in my life. And then realized that when I got it quoted, that plan was going to cost me $100,000 to build.
Okay.
Because it was a custom native app that I didn't have $100,000.
And this was someone on Upwork quoted you $100,000?
No. So I got the full scope, and then I went and looked around the world. I went and downloaded apps that I liked and looked up who developed them. And I started sending my scope to those people.
Okay.
And then when I got the quotes back for $100, I was like, well, that's a bit steep. So I decided to hustle my way around Sydney, and because I live in Sydney here in Australia, and said, hey, web and app agency, if you build this tech product for me, I'll do your advertising and social for free for you and your clients.
Okay.
So I ended up, one of them said yes. So I had a full-time job again, but working for free. They would build my tech. So that was how I was able to get the 100,000.
I misunderstood that. I didn't realize that's what it was. You said, yeah. I'm going to work for free. You build my first version.
Yeah.
And how good was that first version?
Absolutely terrible. I worked for 10 months. It dragged out. I spent my time again. I probably would have done it, but I don't know how I would have got the 100,000. But because I wasn't considered, you know, a paying client, I was kind of left to the side. Different people would pick it up. The code was terrible. But after 10 months, we just launched it into the App Store. And because I'd spent that 10 months doing the pre-launch marketing, so I've got emails running, I'm doing my own social media, I'm doing community management, I'm doing, I think I said email marketing, no paid, all organic, writing blogs. So I'd started SEO as well. And I was probably getting 10,000 hits a week to my blog at this point. And so when I launched the app, I made $10,000 in my first week.
Community management, how? What's the community that you engage with?
So the people that followed me on socials and Facebook groups, and then my nurturing of my emails, and then the responses back and forth to communities. So because I was reaching out to influencers, they would send people my way, and I would have to manage, like, they're saying, hey, talk to Christy, she knows what she's talking about. So I'd have to make sure I'm doing good by them. And so there was a lot of back and forth of chatting. So when I first launched, I think I had 50 influencers talk about my app on the first day for free.
Wow. Mm. What was the price in the App Store?
It was about $10, $20.
So you got $10,000, about 500 to 1,000 customers. Day one. Boom.
Yeah.
And you didn't even have a trial period?
Nope.
Okay. All right. That's got to feel phenomenal.
So what I learned back then was there was no product doing what I did other than SaaS products that charged you $100 a year. So if I put one app out there for $20 and got money up front and I never had to pay again, then I got income and then I could reduce it and turn it into a SaaS later once I had enough revenue to come in to be able to afford the team. I had because there's no way it was going to be sustainable.
With a one-time fee. What did the app do?
So the app had one screen. It was a drag and drop and one scheduling page, and that was it.
And the drag and drop is so that people could have the grid look the way they wanted.
Yeah, so they can visually design how that looks.
How does that work?
It was literally it.
With Instagram, you can't drag and drop the images on your grid, on your profile page, can you?
No, so Plan is for planning in advance. So we pull through your existing images and then you add your own on top and you can visualize how and schedule how the rest
how it looks in the grid. But then what allows you to take a post that I put up 2 weeks ago and is now in the lower right corner of my grid on my Instagram profile and move it to the upper right of my
We can't touch what you've posted on Instagram, but we can help you archive it and see if it doesn't fit anymore.
Okay. So you're not moving it up. You might be moving it out. And then you're letting me see what happens when I post the next 6 images that I've got, how it makes it look.
Or in our case, the next 300 images.
Got it. All right.
Yeah. And we also schedule stories as well. But now.
What kind of dance of joy did you do after you did that?
I sprayed champagne everywhere.
Literally.
But I literally.
You and your husband were shaking champagne and shaking it?
I think I was by myself on the balcony spraying the birds. Like,
why is this not on your Instagram page?
I know. Because there was no one there to take photos back then. It was just me hustling like crazy. And like that was my personal account. And I was running Plan. And I figured that the Plan user who's obsessed with Instagram wouldn't care about the little Christy behind the scenes.
Meanwhile, you were wrong.
Yeah, but I didn't want them to think that it was just some little app. I wanted them to think that this was a really successful global business and they were joining early.
Did you quit that job?
Yes, and no more drawing.
No, I mean, no more drawing. And you also the job that you had to do in order to get the developer, you were done with that.
So that $10,000 was enough to give another team a deposit. And then I just had to make sure referrals.
Okay, and then you had to make sure something I interrupted.
Yeah, and that's right. And I had to make sure that I could interview developers, which was actually very scary. And then I had to make sure that I had enough money to pay them regularly. So I had to quit the job in order to be able to sell the apps to pay the developer team. Because back then, I didn't even know that investment was even an option. I was just making an app in my room.
You know, frankly, it may not have been. I was in Sydney last year as part of my goal of running a marathon on every continent. Mm-hmm. I interviewed entrepreneurs there. It is tough to raise money there compared to where I am here. I happen to be in the heart of San Francisco today.
When I'm in San Francisco, I always make a joke that there's investors on every corner with a t-shirt gun going, you get some money and you get some money. So just
it almost literally is investors on every corner because everybody invests. I think it was a tweet recently where someone said, one of the best things about San Francisco is people don't brag about their cars or their houses. If you do well, you don't buy that. You might buy a Tesla, to be honest, but there's not that other thing that people get excited about. They do brag about the companies they've invested in. That's part of the conversation. And so that does help. All right. Our producer then asked you, how did you grow from there? You said, I posted on my own Instagram. You said you did search engine optimization, Facebook groups. Let's break this down. On your own Instagram, what did you do?
I was telling my own personal Instagram was telling the story of building a company.
And I don't see that in your Instagram. One of the things that I like about you is you're really big on storytelling through Instagram posts. You're saying you remove those old posts where you were sharing what you did to launch
a little bit, yeah. Because they'll become part of something else that I want to do later. So I don't want them to be public anymore.
So, so then what did you do? Tell me about how you did
They're just hidden. And so it's just like this week I'm working on ASO, this week I'm working on SEO. But because it was personal, it fell by the wayside because I was literally working on our business 24/7. So I just didn't have time. So it was like, okay, so do I want to build a business or do I want to build a personal brand? So I went, you know what? Personal brand can just be later. And I need to grow this company.
But for a little bit there, it was a photo of you working on app store optimization, like how to get people to pay attention to you. And that was a photo. And that's how people kept up with what you were doing. So you're saying, look, that did well.
But, and I had no friends because, and they were like, what are you doing? Why are you just hiding away at home? So it was like a way to connect with my in real life friends. So it wasn't really a personal brand. It literally was a personal account. And then I realized that's not what I wanted to do. And okay, that's what you can do. The best thing about it is you can change your mind.
So that's a little bit of that. Search engine optimization. Before we got started, you talked to me about how you did that. At first you said, I just went to Google and I started searching. What were you searching for? How did it help you with SEO?
Yeah. So I knew already with SEO. So done in the course of my career, I'd started teaching myself SEO, and I was a massive nerd. So I'd come home at night and do online SEO courses. And one of the things I learned very, very early is that you can't blog about what you think is important. You have to see what the masses are searching for. So there were insights for me that came from Facebook groups, like people like, oh, Instagram's not working for me. And then like uncovering what they would actually be talking about in the thread. So that would help. People would ask me questions publicly, or even competitors. I'd go onto their Instagram pages and see what people were asking them. And then on Google, so for example, it'd be like, how do I grow my followers? Or I just search Instagram, and then Google would appear and say, are you searching for, or something like, other people also search for. And at the very bottom of the first page of Google, you actually get your answer. It's like, here's what people are searching for. This is what I need to write about. So I'd make sure that they were quite trendy and niche and write about those. And that's where I started.
Okay. And people would come to your site. And then from there, would you collect email addresses or send them over to the app store?
So sending someone from a website straight to the app store to download is a very hard sale. There's no nurturing in there. So to break that down, you've got your top of funnel, which is your socials, sending people to the website.
Yep.
And then you've got your middle and the bottom of funnel, which is what I saw our website do. So the content on the blog was a mixture of, here's how to do Instagram with this app. And the other one was how to do stories or how to edit. So it was a mixture of education plus inspiration. And then there was email collection. There was a lot of white papers. Like, we had a free Instagram masterclass that's probably still on our website. So I sat in my house and I made a 10-minute video series of how to do Instagram strategically. And that collected hundreds of thousands of emails. And then every now and then I'd put out different guides. Like the one that we're about to put out at the moment is 100 free call to actions for every post. So that, it's always very, very helpful, very strategic. And okay. Yeah, so then nurturing that email list as well. And then we got so big that I actually couldn't afford to send emails because we had too many people on the list and it cost me too much money.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was awful.
Okay.
But the joys of bootstrapping. And yeah, so they would be nurtured. So it would come in and then they'd learn more about it. There'd be a product page, there'd be a product demo, and then they'd see, here's the value, and then download. So there was never a hard sale ever.
Okay, fair enough. And so you're doing all this, you're starting to build up your list, you're starting to sell softly. Facebook groups, was it your own group that you did, or was it other people's groups?
No,
you just go into other people's groups and help out. Mm-hmm. And by the way, here's who I am. I'm the person who runs Plan. You can see me at Plan That.
Mm-hmm. So I was also quite strategic because I had I knew who my target audience was from the very beginning. So the very, very, very beginning of my early adapters were going to be female creative entrepreneurs. So basically, could I replicate myself? Okay. And that's who I had been attracting at the very beginning. And so I decided to start there. So I'd wake up early. I'm an early riser. So I'd start in the New Zealand groups, like Etsy, New Zealand businesses, New Zealand crafters, scrapbooking, whatever. And as the time moved on, I would go and say, okay, hey guys, this hashtag is trending right now for us. I think you should jump on it. And I would work New Zealand and then Australia and then Asia and then Canada. And I would roll through the countries all night and I would give this tidbit of information. And I started making friends. And I had a Facebook profile that I would use that was mine, but all the information on the wall was my business. So as soon as they were like, well, who's this girl? Is she reputable? Uh-huh. They'd click on my name, which then clicked to my website, and I would grow my audience there too.
A secondary Facebook page?
Yeah.
You did? Okay. One that's just for your business stuff so that you're not sharing family photos on it.
Yeah.
Got it. Wowee. All right. And so this is growing for you. You start targeting influencers even more, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're not going to expand your own Instagram feed, then you might as well start going after Instagrammers. You told them, I'm working on something and would love if you gave me feedback. That's the approach that you took with them. Am I right?
That's right.
They would do that. They would, because it's for them. Yeah, it's built for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they would give me feedback and I'd send them screenshots and they'd let me know if it was working or not.
All right. How did you keep a marriage going, by the way, with all this?
Oh,
I've been asking people tough. Who work hard how they do that.
It was difficult because my husband was working in corporate finance. And so he'd come home and at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and he's like, what have you been doing all day? You haven't even showered. And I was like, I'll talk to you soon. And then at like 2 a.m., he's like, babe, I'm going to bed. I was like, oh, I'll be with you in a minute. And then I just never saw him. It was bad. My mental health got pretty bad there for a while. And he was like, Christy, I think we've got to talk about this. And then there was a few days that he was like, do you still want to do this? Because I literally was working myself into the bone. And it was funny because the one time that he ever said, so he was the most supportive man on the planet. Like he would dive into customer support. He now works full time as COO. So like he was already invested. He was helping me with the books. But the one time back in the early, early days, I would have had about 30,000 downloads. I wasn't making any money. I was struggling to pay developers. I was working like crazy. And he was like, is this really what you want? You know, is this the life that you actually want? And I was like, yes. And it was really funny because the only time he was ever questioning, is this what you want? It was the next week that the viral growth started.
Why did you say yes?
Because I really wanted it.
You wanted what? Is it that you wanted the fame, the money, to
no,
see
I wanted
this
the freedom.
Project? The freedom.
Well, like I'd always wanted my own business, and here it was. It was right in front of me, and it meant that I would never have to return to a 9-to-5. I could swim at the beach when I wanted. I could open a bottle of wine in the middle of the day. I could, you know, be one of those people that could travel with my laptop if I wanted.
Are you doing any of these things?
Yes, I am.
You are. What's a fun thing that you've done because you're working for yourself on a passion project?
I just went to Thailand for 2 weeks and worked from my laptop.
From your laptop? Yeah. Where in Thailand did you work?
Phuket.
And is Phuket, there's a beach there, right?
Yeah, it's all beachy.
Did you work from the beach?
I didn't take my laptop down, but I wake up really early. So I'd work from like 5 a.m. till 10 a.m. So I get 5 hours and I'm crazy productive. So, you know, full day's work and then have the day off. And yeah.
What are you doing now these days? Now that you've got a team of people, what's in your hours? What are you doing? What are you leading?
So I have a team in Sydney and there's a core team in Sydney and then we're scattered around the world. So today I'll probably work from home. I've got a meeting with a few other founders this afternoon and then just running the team. I'm very hands-on in the product team and marketing teams, but mostly product. So since we launched the app, we've had almost 2 million downloads. We're in 160 countries. We've built a profitable business and we've gone from app to web app. Because what was happening is our people.
Let's pause it there. I know that. So SaaS was next and then web app after that, which is a surprise. And there's a reason for it. I'm going to take a moment to talk about my sponsor and then we'll get back into your story. My sponsor is a company called TopTal. Do you know much about them? Do you know anything about them, Christy?
I know that they're a recruiting agency and I've tried them out a couple of times.
You did or did not?
I tried them a couple of times, yeah. But I think at the time they were very, very new and they only had Silicon Valley talent that I could not afford.
So what they're known for is having Silicon Valley quality developers, the types of people who would work at Instagram, at Google, because if you give them a problem, they could not just take your solution, but better yet, they could come up with a better solution than you could. And for a long time, they were, I think for many people, out of reach. The beauty of their program now is they've got people all over the world in markets where they don't need to pay as much as we have to pay here in San Francisco, but because TopTal still has that reputation, still has that credibility, people who are phenomenal developers still want to be a part of their development team. They still do the same screening process. They still exclude 97 out of 100 people who apply. 97%, and it's actually even grown higher than that, don't get in. And the few that do get into their network are the best of the best. So if someone like you ever needs a developer today, you're looking at definitely more expensive than some of the platforms we talked about earlier, but not astronomically high. And the results are 10x better than a regular developer could do for you. If you're looking for a developer, I guarantee that you're going to love them. In fact, all you have to do is go to toptal.com/mixergy. When you do, you press that button, you schedule a call with a matcher. We'll understand what you're looking for, help you think through the project, and then put you in front of a few developers within their network to see if they're the right fit. If you're happy with them, get started. They'll even give you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. But if you're not happy, they've got a risk-free trial period there. They will pay the developer on your behalf. They're not stiffing the developer, but they're not going to charge you if you're not happy with the results. So they want to make sure you're happy with it. They want to make sure you get exactly what you need. And if anyone out there wants that offer, all you have to do is go to toptal.com/mixergy. Super fast, phenomenal developers. TOPTAL.com/mixergy. M-I-X-E-R-G-Y, toptal.com/mixergy. How big did you get before you went to monthly fees?
Not long. It was only 6 months in.
Well, that was
so
it.
I would have been making, I'd say $30,000 to $40,000 a month from one-off purchases.
Okay.
And then I got to the point where I was like, okay, I need to make a sustainable business, and I had a look at what my competitors and everyone else that was kind of in my space was. And I realized by this point, I'd done enough research and reading books on SaaS and how software worked that I was like, okay, this has to happen. So the scary thing was going from having, you know, a pretty healthy, at the time was very, very healthy revenue for a couple of staff members, to then going right back to charging $2 a month or $3 a month and earning a tenth, and going, oh my God, have I made the right decision? Because it took another few months to build that back up to 40K.
How long did it take to build it back up?
I'd say another 4 or 5 months. Ages, like a lifetime.
Did you have panicky nights, or did you see a continuous increase? You did.
Absolutely.
And when you wake up in the middle of the night panicked, what do you do?
Yeah.
What do you do when you wake up in the middle of the night panicked?
Put on meditation music, eat melatonin gummies, have a tea, read a book, annoy my husband, anything.
You'll have a tea in the middle of the night, read a book?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
You know, the thing that works for me is I always sleep with an AirPod. I listen to something. It's either this one show that I listen to over and over to the point where I know every word by heart, or it's this audio book. And getting lost in the story helps me chill and go right back to sleep. It's just amazing. Melatonin gummies. I've seen some people give that to their kids. Does that work?
Yep.
Literally, they give it to their kids. Yeah. It does work. It helps you fall asleep within how long?
10 minutes, 10, 15.
Okay.
Yeah. Your timer is set.
What was that?
My phone going off.
With a phone call
with
coming
an alarm.
In?
I think it overheard us and Siri decided to have a chat.
Oh, okay. I was hoping maybe it gave me some insight into you. All right. So you're going SaaS. What did you do with the people who paid for the product full out?
I grandfathered them in.
So they get lifetime access, don't have to pay monthly.
I've all got lifetime access, yeah.
Wow. I have a few apps that I've got that with. It's just phenomenal because you see them improve it because they're getting money every month, but you don't have to pay for it.
Yeah, and they've become loyalists. And by giving them and showing them value, they then have talked about the app. They've got no reason to churn and go anywhere else. They don't have to pay anything. And they have provided me with the best case studies. I saw it as an investment because I pretty much gave the product to them for free. But what I learned from them was huge, through customer support or them emailing through with suggestions and ideas. That was invaluable. And had I been charging them and then being angry, they wouldn't have stayed at the very early days. So for me, that generosity at the start was actually quite helpful.
Give me specifics. What's a specific piece of feedback that came in from users that influenced how you shaped the product?
It was an overwhelming, when I first launched, it was a drag and drop grid. And there was an overwhelming desire for, hey, we want to be able to edit the photos and crop them inside. And so that led me to be like, okay, well, can I find one? And there was a whole bunch of free ones that I didn't think were that great. And when I started asking them which set of image filtering, here are the demos, which ones do you like the filters of the most, and which would you actually use? I was able to make a decision.
Because I got it. I wouldn't have thought that people would want editing within the app because there's editing in their phone already.
But this is like more, you've got text, you've got filters, you've got like flare overlays, all the creative tools as well.
So one thing that I highlighted here was in the scaling section of my notes, apparently you told our producer that you built a tool to sneak on other people and get analytics like the best performing color palettes. What does that mean?
So inside Plan itself, inside the app, you can search up your competitors or your friends. And if they've got a public account, we can pull through their information. So you can see, for example, when I was talking about my brand being associated to West Elm, I was like, well, my people might like their color scheme. So I look up West Elm, I find their best performing color palette, and I'm like, well, okay, well, if I align my colors that might be too on the red scale and they're on the green scale and they might like more neutrals, I'll give that a try. Because for me, the way that I operate is as a marketer, is a tester and a growth hacker type situation. So if I can try and fast track my learning, then I will. So if I can find the information from other people that have done it for me, then I'll just steal it. So I don't have to pay for it either. So I can pull out their colors. I can pull out when they've posted. And I can even take their hashtags.
Okay. So let's say founder is, I know I feel like the founder, Nathan? He's going to get upset that I would do that. Sorry. Yeah. Nathan, like he's huge on Instagram. I might say, you know, he and I have the same audience, both entrepreneurial audience. I'm getting started with Instagram. What I want to know is what's a good time to post. Let's have Plan suck in his data and tell me what time works best for him. And then I might, if I'm starting, I might as well, instead of starting from zero, start with what works for him and keep testing. And I use that. If I say, what color schemes wouldn't be big in my world? What else would I want to know?
You'd want to know, so you can go back over time and see what has worked. So the best, the most engaged and the most liked posts. So okay. You can see over 3 months or a year or lifetime, what posts are actually working for him. So when we talked about themes earlier, we were talking about, hey, so education works or inspiration works or community works. You might be able to have a look at his best performing images and be able to pinpoint what it is that's working and then try that.
Got it. I might start to notice that when he has a photo of a guest for his magazine, right? If Founders of Magazine.
Or which guest.
Or which guest. Guest was popular. And then go get that guest or get the style of the way that he posted from that guest.
Did he have a great background, or did he have a microphone and shot, or was it just of him? Was it a quote?
Right.
And see if there's any themes.
You know what? I've noticed that he will post about people who have nothing to do with Founder. Like he might have never talked to Richard Branson, but said, you know, I think my audience likes Richard Branson. So he might post a nice photo of Richard Branson with a quote.
Yeah, but that might get Richard Branson attention as well.
Got it. But for me as an outsider, I might have a hunch that that's working for him. With Plan, I know for sure whether it's working for him or not, as far as audience engagement.
Yeah.
And then I might be able to do something similar, say, why am I limiting myself to what's happening? Got it. Why am I limiting myself to who I'm interviewing?
Yeah.
So that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. So gut feel can get you so far, but the real decision-making and growth comes from real data. And that's it's in our app that's built in already.
You were saying that your husband was asking you to reconsider. Eventually, he saw you were doing so well. You said that he's working for you. How did that happen that he's now working for you?
Well, I was living, one of my first years, I lived in San Francisco for 3 months to learn. So I wanted to really immerse myself in Silicon Valley. And that's probably where we met, was when I was doing that. I have gone back several more times, but not for as long. And I met some great mentors and people that taught me way more than I could have ever learned here in Sydney. Not saying the startup community is not good. It's just like it's just so dense that it happens so quick over there. And so we were apart a lot. The time zone were off. Our relationship was already pretty strained with how much I was working. And
he was home in Sydney and you were here in San Francisco for 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that would really put a strain on a relationship. Okay.
Yeah. And I did I did it multiple times with his blessing. And he knew how important it was to me. So he kind of was pretty understanding. But as every husband was like, is this right for us? Is this, you know, what you want for your future and our relationship? So we had like some big talks. And then I was like, I actually want you to come with me. Or I think I was going somewhere. And I was like, he's like, you're traveling a lot. I'm like, well, you could always just come with me. And so I kind of started planting the seed. And then when I started his work as well in corporate finance, didn't really understand your wife at home building a software company. And so he would get comments like, oh, you know, we know you've got to look after your wife and all those types of comments. And, you know, how's your little app going and things like that. So those are the types of comments
that were coming
through. With grace, I think.
Was it an effort to like not be seen as inferior to his wife?
No, it was more the attitude of get a real job. Why isn't Christy got
people.
A real job? Yeah, from
you
other
know
people.
That bothered
so it was
me
not
too
that
about
supportive.
My wife.
Yeah.
When people would put down what she was doing because it wasn't like it wasn't expected, it wasn't traditional. That really bothered me. And I don't know why. I think maybe because it's...
Yeah. I think like because they looked at me like I had a little hobby business at home where I could see where it was going and my dreams were so much bigger than that. And then when he came home one day and he was doing the books and I had made more money in 1 week than he had in a month. And he was like, what is going on? And I'm like, look at all my curves. They're all smiling. They're all going the right way. Are you sure? And he went to soccer practice and he came home that night and he's like, you know what? I'm going to quit tomorrow. I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. And by this point, like my world was falling apart. Everything had grown virally. Operations couldn't keep up. I was desperate for help and no one knew the business quite like he would. And he came home. He's like, you know what? I'm in. And the next day he went into his office and said, I'm going to leave and work with Christy. And they were like, what? So, and it wasn't until I started to get a few. So now Plan's won 5 international awards. We've been mentioned everywhere and it's kind of growing. And it's one of those apps that people are like, oh yeah, I've heard of that app before. And it wasn't until that happened and Tim became part of the full-time team that I was started to take seriously in my real life.
You mentioned some problems. So far, we've been talking about the happy-go-lucky stuff. Tell me what happened with AWS, Amazon Web Services, and your IP address.
Ooh, so I learned this the hard way. I didn't know how to build architecture of software as no experience in it. And I just thought that all developers did developy things. And one of my app developers hard-coded our Amazon IP address into the app. And every now and then, Amazon refreshes their servers or they go down. So Amazon went down and then they refresh, which gives out a new IP address, which is meant to be flexible. But because ours is hard-coded, it didn't connect to Amazon anymore. So all of my users, and I think at this point I would have had, 30,000 daily users, got a black screen of death.
In the app that they paid for.
Yep. Yep. Shame. So I would be very embarrassed to say that this is my biggest mistake ever. And they would open the app and get a black screen. So there was no way to contact me. They had to go through my website and try and find the contact form. I got blasted all over social media. My review in the app store went down. Like everything just kind of destroyed. I was actually, and because I was still kind of side hustling a little bit in the background, I was away at a wedding as a stylist in an area with no reception as well. So it all, timing was amazing. There we go.
There's waiting the alert. We're going over time.
So waiting for it. Distracted. The black screen of death, I then had to find an Amazon Web Service specialist, which was hustling through my Silicon Valley contacts to try and find someone. I found someone in Jamaica who could do it at short notice, but was 4 days, cost like $5,000. And then I had to get the app developers to fix it, get it back through the app store and back to my people, which was a week. And I was like, this is it. It's over. I worked myself. I had 30,000 emails and I worked myself into an ambulance. It was horrible. I thought I was having a panic. I thought I was having a heart attack. Well, people around me thought I was having a heart attack, but it was probably a panic attack. And I got put in an ambulance with absolute adrenal fatigue and exhaustion. And I laid in a bed for probably 3 weeks. And my husband just jumped in and cleaned up my inbox and kind of just managed everything for me. And then when I got back up on my feet, he was like, are you ready to do this again? I'm like, let's go.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So wow. I mean, it's painful. Don't get me wrong, but wow. That at the end of that, you said, I'm ready. Let's go. Do you ever take vacations now where you're completely disconnected?
My first one was a bit in Thailand. Yeah.
You're still doing email in the morning.
Yeah. I'm still emailing. And I mean, it's my life and I love it. Like I get to wake up and do something that I love doing. So
you know what? It's addictive. I had some friends who were going to Cuba fairly early on in their businesses. And at the time I wasn't taking vacations and I didn't understand why are they doing it. And I realized they weren't being lazy. They were stress testing their team. Like if you're in Cuba or some out of the way place, you can't be reached. So you have to have the discipline or your imposed discipline to not be reached. They then as a team had the discipline to not need them. And the founders started to treat and teach their people how to run without them. All right. I do have a note here to come back and ask you about the web. You at some point said, look, I know I'm mobile first, but people are asking me for a web version. Why? Why'd you have to make that switch?
So teams will grow. So what would happen is that people would join Plan and then use the software, but they started growing. And so they tried to scale with us and it got quite hard to scale teams on an app. And
as a team, because if I'm working with the app myself, why can't my assistant have the app also and log into the same thing?
So Canva does it. They absolutely can.
But
what we were asked for is that we want to sit at our desktop and we want to do it planning at my desk.
Yeah.
So we could offer the mobile and also Apple take 30%. So I was like, okay, so let's see if we can make more money by doing our own version and providing the scaling equipment that teams are needing. So we then launched bootstrapped and saved up and built over time. It took about a year to build. the web app version. So I launched the MVP version of the web app about April of 2019. Uh-huh. And within 6 months, it was doing the same as the apps. So it was the right choice.
Yeah.
And then we started getting the feedback coming through of what they wanted and what teams wanted. And I'm a week away from relaunching the redesigned better version, plan version 2 of the web app next week. So it's what one of those alarms is for.
By the time this is, what's the alarm about? I have a note here to ask you about the alarms. Why do you have alarms go off so much?
So that I keep track of, so I plan my day versus like in hour blocks. So uh-huh. If you have a goal, your goal is only met by what you do every day.
Okay.
Yeah. So if I organize my day, then I will actually meet my goal. So I have a few hours in the morning when I'm most productive that I do certain tasks and things for myself or the team. And then next task. And then so I know that I will reach my goal at the end of the week.
And you set alarms for yourself to make sure that you're sticking with it. And the fact that we're now 12 minutes beyond the hour, how painful is that for you?
I have a coaching session she'll be waiting for me. So
okay. All right.
I've let her know. I've popped her a note that I might run late. So
I saw that as I was doing that ad, you did it.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going through Ahrefs to see what keyword you're targeting, to see what you're doing as SEO. Let me close it out with just, I've got to ask you about it.
We rank about 80,000 words, I think. 80,000 keywords
like what?
Now.
What are some of the keywords? I'm going through organic keywords to see what you're big on. And so it's things like username ideas.
From username ideas, best holiday captions, how to do Instagram story highlight covers, like anything. So I spend a lot of time making sure we put out expert content.
I see why, because somebody who's new to Instagram wants to know what's a good username to create. If they're mm-hmm. coming in and finding it through you, they're also finding out how to post better. And because they didn't figure out how to post better, they are now more connected to you, more likely to sign up and buy. All right.
Exactly.
I'm going to close it out now. I know we went over and I probably said close it out a few times.
It's that funnel thing again. So you'll find that we rank for all different types of the funnel. So you've got the bottom of funnel, which is the how-tos, right through to how to make a strategy, how to read analytics. So it depends on how advanced you are. So we make sure that we target all types of personas.
Yeah, this is the most, usually I'm in Ahrefs and I don't understand the mentality and what the person's doing. And it's just like a random set of stuff. With you, I can totally see this. Like I can see the questions that people have. I could see how the keywords are linking over to posts. Yeah. I can see apparently Instagram to or YouTube to Instagram is a big topic. You've covered that. You've got the keywords. It's just
I think like over 7 million unique people visit our website this year or last year. So it's working, and one of the big things that I try and help people with the SEO is like try and solve a problem and then link that problem back to your product. So we have 5 problems that we solve for people. So that's like understanding what works, how to grow followers, how to look better, how to make sales. So all of our blog posts fit into those themes that help people solve problems. And then at the end or during the blog post, we will link how that problem is solved in our product. If that helps anyone, I hope it does.
I got a big smile from it. okay, the website for anyone who wants to go check it out, it's planthat.com. There is a free version. It's up to 30 posts a month, which if you're getting started, you can, right? Am I right about that? Yeah.
Yeah, starts from $7 a month.
And then it goes $7 a month. And then there's a business version and it's just all on there. And it's a pleasure to see how far you've come.
I've got a couple of huge integrations coming out. And I can probably tell you this because it might be out when this is published, but we're about to launch a partnership with Canva.
I saw something in your face when I said Canva and I said, is she like want to take on Canva or something? All right. Yeah. I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. If you need a website hosted with your idea, with your personal site, with anything, go to hostgator.com/mixergy. Really start your business. It's going to be so exciting. You know what? I won't say it's always that exciting. Frankly, you've had a ball building your business, but you've also been knocked out for a bit. So it's going to be up and down, but man, it's fun. If you don't have a website, go get it. Go get started with your business. Hostgator.com/Mixergy. When you're ready for the best of the best developers, the people who will know not to hard code your IP into your software so you don't get a long-term outage. Go to toptal.com/Mixergy. I'm very proud that we are associated with them. And let me just thank also, I don't think I've done this before, Ahrefs for just giving me this tool that I've been using to research my guests. Chrissy, thank you so much. Hope to see you in San Francisco. I'll let you run before more alarms go off. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.